right, so welcome everyone to our final session. We don't have anything formal scheduled for today, but I thought it would be fun to kind of reflect on these past couple of months and think about what we've learned and also think a little bit about what the maybe open problems are in light of everything that's been said. So, what's that?
You weren't there yesterday.
I wasn't there yesterday, that's right.
There was also already a lot about open problems.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think we can continue that. We touched one issue.
Okay.
So we'll see, what does, in your opinion, and then we'll fill it.
So what I thought would be kind of fun is I know at least from my point of view, we had a, in these past couple of months, I have a lot of new ideas for projects to work on, and so I thought it would kind of be fun to share, if you guys had some new ideas as well, what would be, kind of share those and think about looking towards the future as well as summarizing the meeting. So maybe just to get that started, I thought.
Maybe you'll use that and we'll record it.
Oh, you want me to use this?
Okay. But I discussed with the guy and he said it's fine to put it there and
okay.
Then it will record everything.
Okay, okay. All right.
And
fine.
We can then later choose whether it should go online or not.
Okay, fine. Yes, so I thought I'd just say a few words about kind of projects that occurred to me that I want to work on and then share them with you. And then if you wanted to do something similar or just talk about some of the things that you are maybe appreciate learning about, that would also be good for the group. So, so one of the things, yes, so we, I mean, if I think at this conference or this meeting, there have been several themes, and it's been interesting to see how the sub-themes kind of interact with each other. So one of the sub-themes, for example, is the kind of thing that Marcus Striegel and Mark Shrednicki and Jochen have been working on, which is this eigenstate thermalization hypothesis. That's sort of one group that's kind of touched on these issues. The other theme are things like Ronnie talked about, you know, sort of the theme of engines and how to design engines using, you know, shortcut adiabaticity to increase efficiency or power, rather, and so on. And so one of the other themes that I'm also kind of involved in this community is this thermoelectric stuff. And so one issue that we were thinking about and started working on with Janine and also with Rafa Sanchez and Bjorn Softman is the question about it deals both with thermometry, which is one of the things Louise talked about, but also with about trying to build a thermal transistor. And so the idea there was to think about a system where you have a quantum point contact or some kind of a conductor, and it's capacitively coupled to some kind of quantum dot, which is then self-coupled to some thermal reservoir. And then the issue was, if you know the microscopic physics of the system, so the charging energy of the dot, or the how this transmission depends upon the characteristic potential, that's the potential of this quantum point contact, to try to optimize that geometry so that I'm maximally sensitive to what the temperature of this bath is. So the idea is I would apply some kind of voltage across this conductor, and then I would measure some current flowing through this, and this current has its own noise source, but then as electrons come on and off this dot, the idea is that this would then modulate the current of this conductor, and then because this is a thermal reservoir coming on and off of the dot, that would then modulate that. So the idea is this is a little bit like a thermal transistor. So the idea is I have some kind of weak heat current flowing through the system, J, and then because of the nonlinear, if you make this in a quantum point contact in a nonlinear regime, you could have some large current response to a small heat input. So this is kind of like a thermal transistor, I guess, or thermoelectric transistor. And so this is something we're interested in, sort of working out some of the details of. So that's one thing.
So,
yeah.
From where to where does the heat current flow? I mean, it comes from this Del Loredo one, right? And then does it go just everywhere, or?
So the heat current would be flowing from this part of the circuit into this part of the circuit, okay? So you'd have, so the idea is that even though there's a capacitor, there's a break, I can't have any electrons flow through that, but I can still have heat flow through that because of the fluctuations of the potential.
And the heat just sort of goes everywhere then?
Yeah, the heat would come in and then dissipate into the reservoirs of these contacts, right? So you couple these to ohmic reservoirs. And this also has some temperature. But the idea here is to kind of get away strictly from a thermal point of view. The idea is that here is you apply voltage much larger, so EV much bigger than KT. You don't care too much about the thermal reservoirs in this sense. And so that's just why it's kind of like acting like a thermal transistor, because you just need a little bit of heat to flow in some sense to get some large current response. So this is one thing we're sort of working out, and it's interesting. So the other thing we're thinking more like with Cyril, the idea is that we're thinking about these quantum measurement engines, right? So this is one of the things that I talked about in my presentation. And we had a nice conversation with Rafa Sanchez and also with Cyril about things to sort of work on with that. And one of the things we're interested in is the idea is trying to think about incorporating some of the energetics, like some of these ratchet models with these quantum measurement models. So this is actually where we started with our first project. And the idea is you have some kind of nonlinear potential, something like this, so on and so forth. And then the idea is that you're trying to then measure the particles that live in this potential. So this is not a single particle engine, it's a mini particle engine. And then you have some interplay between the measurements. So imagine you do some kind of selective measurement. Is the particle in these regions, something like that, or not? And then also apply maybe some feedback. Maybe you tilt the potential this way or that way or something like this. And so this is another kind of way of trying to scale up these ideas we had about this single quantum measurement engine. And so the idea is you have an interplay between where the position is, so localizing the wave function by doing some kind of position measurement, and then applying some kind of feedback, and then looking at the exchange of how much current can you rectify, can you make current flow from left to right, and then by applying a slight bias to that, then you do work against that potential. Okay. So that was one other thing we had a nice conversation about. I think we're going to be working with Cyril and Rafa on this. So then on that same topic, this idea of quantum measurement engines. So I was really intrigued by this talk that was given in the conference by Cyril? I'm forgetting his name at the moment. Michele Campisi, yeah. So he had this really nice idea, which is, the idea is you have two qubits, right? Something like this. And you connect this qubit to one thermal reservoir, T1, and this qubit to this other thermal reservoir, T2. And this is like these models Ronnie came up with, whatever, 20 years ago. But it's a kind of variation on that. And then the idea is that, in Michele's paper that I just have on the archive, the idea is you make some kind of a joint measurement on the combination of the two. All right. So rather than measuring, is qubit one up or down, qubit two up or down, you make some kind of measurement some kind of entangled basis. And so he writes down some sort of ideal set of projectors, P1, P2, P3, and P4. And then the idea then is that this level has a certain energy, that level has a certain energy. And then by doing this projection together with dissipation of this level into this reservoir and that level into that reservoir, you can arrange things just right, so you end up cooling this reservoir. So this is a fridge on this guy, and then it dumps the heat into this reservoir. So it's sort of like a measurement-based refrigerator, but what's interesting is the fact that the you don't actually read the measurements. You just do these measurements, but you don't actually read them. You just average over the measurements, and so actually the net average state is, if I average over all these measurements and I look at the reduced state, it's actually a separable state. It's not even an entangled state. And so I think we have this interesting idea talking with Geraldine and also with Benjamin Uard, think about trying to implement this idea in a circuit QED setup. So now the idea would be something like this. You could imagine you have this qubit sitting in some refrigerator, or for some cavity rather, just some microwave cavity that's superconducting. You have some superconducting circuit like a transmon qubit. You have something else over here, same thing. And these guys have the same level structure. This has energy epsilon 1. This has energy epsilon 2, which is bigger than epsilon 1. And now what's interesting is you can have both of these cavities encased in one big dilution refrigerator, so you make everything superconducting. And how do you, then what do you do? So then the idea is you run a microwave line into this qubit, into this cavity. You take another microwave line out, and you put it into this one. And you take the microwave line out this way. Okay, and there are various ways to do that with circulators and microwave electronics. And so the idea is that even though you can have this the qubits in two separate cavities, you're able to then couple. So you imagine now you do the measurement using one mode of the cavity, or you couple this resonantly to this mode of the cavity, and then you do something like, and then you measure with another mode of the cavity, something like that. Okay? And then that way you can actually then implement this strategy by doing this joint, what we call partial parity measurement, where you're able to resolve, for example, the 0-0 state and the 1-1 state by looking at the amplified outcome here, but then you wouldn't resolve the 0-1 or the 1-0 state. These would not be distinguishable by your measurement. This is what they call partial parity measurement. And so we're not entirely sure it works, but we think it's going to work. But if you do this, you'll be able to then, if we couple, say, this Brown mode to some microwave microwave transmission line to some black body, say, temperature T1, this is just a photon reservoir, and the same thing here, T2, we should be able to realize this. We should be able to actually cool this black body and heat this black body. So I think it's going to work, but we're not sure yet. But something I wanted to mention, some kind of a fun thing. So then maybe one other idea I'll mention, and then I'll stop, and we can turn it over to other people to think about their thoughts, is I had a really nice idea with Giosotto from Pisa. He gave us this nice lecture about using little small refrigerators and superconducting electronics. And the idea there is simply to try, so many of our engines are using these little engines, right? They're using, you have a little bit of energy, right? You have the energy essentially between epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. That's sort of the amount of work you're able to do in the program. And so many of the engines we design are like that. But thinking forward and also thinking on a larger scale, we want to think about things ultimately, like I was talking with Janet about this last night, things that are also practical. So if we're building refrigerators, we not only want to cool some tiny little thing, we want to cool maybe an actual beer refrigerator or something like that, or you want to cool something big. So how can we sort of take these ideas we've been discussing and turn them into something that's really practical for some kind of application, something you can sell to a refrigerator company or something like that? And so one idea we're thinking about with Giosotto is we have sort of an energy scale in these systems that is natural, that hasn't really been tapped properly, I think. And that energy scale is simply the superconducting gap. Right. So typically this gap is a few millivolts or whatever, but it's characteristic of the superconducting transition. And so the idea is to try to build a refrigerator that takes advantage of this energy scale. So if I simply take, so like in our commercial refrigerators, the ones back home in your room, the way it works is you have some kind of working fluid, and then you have two cycles. You pump this fluid to a high pressure, and then you let it go through a valve, it expands, it cools down, and then it cools the part of the refrigerator you're interested in, then it goes back in, then you repump it, and you repeat the cycle, okay? So the idea is that that's basically working on the latent heat of that phase transition. That's what drives that refrigerator, that's what makes it a powerful thing, and the fact that it's a fluid-gas transition. And so the idea is we're trying to design some kind of refrigerator that uses this as kind of the working substance. So think about driving a system from a superconducting phase to a metallic phase, and then repeating the cycle. Say with a magnetic field, you drive it back and forth, and then you can use that latent heat of the first order phase transition as you drive it from one to the other. That's your energy source, and you can say try to then cool some nearby either superconductor or other metal down to a lower temperature. Okay. So those are just wanted to give some kind of sense of the flavors of the things that at least I was inspired by at this conference and things looking forward to the future that I want to work on. So that's all I wanted to say. Yes.
Regarding these machines and what you call thinking forward and selling them to some company, in which sense do you think will any of the machines we've been discussing here ever be more useful than what the engineers out there already have?
Yeah, so to use this last example as one thing that I think could actually be useful, how do we make most of the low cryogenic temperatures, most of the cryogenic stuff is out there, you know, everything from superconducting circuits to Josephson detectors to magnetometers is all based on this dilution fridge technology, right? You have helium, right? It's a helium-3, helium-4 dilution refrigerator, okay? But we all know that there's not an infinite supply of helium out there, and helium's getting more expensive. And so if you think about other ways to cool that doesn't involve helium, this could be really big, right? And so I think thinking along those lines.
So the goal is trying to get rid of helium?
No, I think I can add to this discussion. There's already existing a refrigerator which is called ADR, a diabetic magnetization refrigerator, which is an autocycle refrigerator, and you can look at Google and you can see it works on satellites where they don't want to carry helium. So you could say the motivation of NASA to develop it was to get rid of helium. They don't want to carry. They want to cool the detectors that look at black body radiation. So you can say the good thing about NASA, they have, relative to our home refrigerator, infinite resources to design something like that. But it all relies on magnetic salt. So you can say it would be a macroscopic version of what we're talking about, because you're basically using transitions in magnetic salts. You're increasing and decreasing your magnetic field. This is an autocycle. And this works. Now, they're going to larger scale, and this is not what I'm interested in, but just to say that it exists, there are a few companies, one in China that I know of, and in Denmark, that want to produce these refrigerators as home appliance to replace Freon, because existing, also environmental reasons, you don't want Freon. Magnetic salts is probably better than to have in your refrigerator than Freon. And There are designs like that. How practical they are, it probably depends on the availability of magnetic salts and so on. But if you go to labs which have dilution refrigerators, many of them have ADRs. And as a replacement, I think to try to, part of it I would say is people are trying to learn new technology to do that. And you can say in principle an ADR is could be as good. It's a question of, I would say, but then the question is how to miniaturize it, really. Because I would say if you look at, I didn't bring my laptop, but if it's sitting there, one of the restrictions of laptops is cooling.
Yeah.
If you want to think how, so miniaturizing a refrigerator is an engineering test that hasn't been done. Not properly. So this, I would say, is an important task. So what are methods that are used to cool? So you could say laser cooling or polarization cooling. So that's one variant of that, which we can also classify one of the engines we're talking about, because you could say that's what a big enabler of a lot of physics technology. You can see all cold atoms and so on are enabled by that. And so if you think about a technological test, I don't say I think miniaturizing a refrigerator is a major technological task. It hasn't been done, and I think this community has a capacity at least to understand what's happening. It's not magic, you have to do that. And there's, you can say the applications will come, and you can say the big application of a quantum computer works on basically a dilution refrigerator. I went to visit the local version here. You have huge barrels hanging from the ceiling. It doesn't look like my laptop, and I'm not sure it's more powerful than my laptop at this point, but less. So the other point that I want to say, okay, there's this technology that we're talking about of superconducting qubits, making circuits. It's the same technology that makes a refrigerator. Basically, we're using the same tools as quantum computing. We're using gates, or we can do this or that, or an absorption refrigerator. I would look at this, what you draw here is a certain version of an absorption refrigerator. So my vision of a quantum computer is that you can have all this, somebody prints this, whatever, this device. Half of it is a refrigerator, and half of it is the refrigerator that allows this computer to work at all. This is, you could say, the only way I can think you can miniaturize it in a reasonable way to make it to work like that. And just another comment that I want to say about refrigeration, the issue about refrigeration is not energy, it's entropy. It's really how to get rid of entropy. And why is superconducting a good idea? Because it carries, since it's non-local, it carries the entropy away. We generate an event here and it goes to the other side of the room. That's the same with laser cooling. This is why these are enabling technologies for really going to low temperature. Our home refrigerator works on diffusion, and we know diffusion, or our car, is very slow, and that's why we need very large devices. But this is not the way to go. This is because you could say our entropy production device is the bottleneck. So this, I hope, gives my viewpoint on a good question that you asked.
Yeah, let me also just follow up on your comment. I see also the issue is also what do you want to cool? So for our home refrigerators, we're going to cool beer cans, right? But for our these little refrigerators, so suppose you want to apply this, as Ronnie said, to these superconducting technologies. You want to build a superconducting quantum computer. All your chip is like, you know, this tiny little thing, right? It has a very small heat capacity. It can be isolated from everything else. So it doesn't take a huge power, even, milliwatts of power, sub-milliwatts of power. There's plenty enough power to cool this almost as low as you want to go. And so if that's your application in mind, then you need targeted design refrigerators for that task, right? And that's something that I don't think engineers have considered.
Now that's good. What's the status, the current status with solid state thermoelectric refrigeration? Like Kepler or these things?
Yeah, so if you look at Peltier coolers.
You don't have them at home, right? They're in cars like BMW, having the seats, right?
So if you look at Peltier coolers, the issue is that there's a big industry in that. They wire them up so you have thermal transport in parallel, electrical transport in series, in order to maximize, basically this is all semiconductor p-n junctions, essentially, is the way it works. And the issue is that the efficiency is not very good, right? It's nowhere close to the Carnot bound. So people are thinking all the time about ways to, if you read this literature, you hear about ZT all the time. I hate ZT. But they always try to think about something. They try to design some new material that has some higher ZT, and this makes the cover of nature or whatever. I think this is a little bit silly. But so I think one of the hopes anyway is that by thinking about some of this nanotechnology stuff, mesoscopic transport, new ways, using just sort of design engineered materials, in principle you can get much higher efficiencies and efficiency and maximum power. So that I think hopefully. Some of that will end up being useful in the future.
But do you agree that you can do a Peltier with a single level quantum dot, and that's the ideal? In theory, I don't know about the practical limitation. But it's because you can have thermoelectric effect with a single level quantum dot and two leads at different bias and different temperatures.
Oh, of course.
So from a theory point of view,
yes,
this is the ideal.
Yes. Exactly. And not only theory, there have been now a number of experiments that have, shown this, that the operating flows to Carnot efficiency with these single level quantum dots. But the problem, Maximiliano, is you can say, shrug your hand and say, so what? It's not going to run my car, right?
And I need 10,000s of them.
So the issue is, you've got one quantum dot or one, so say a cavity with two resonant quantum dots working just great. So then what are you going to do with it? How are you going to scale it up? How are you going to make something practical with that? Right? So that's somehow, in my mind, there's still a gap between these theoretical, experimental, fundamental advances and trying to do something practical.
But do you think we have something to contribute to that?
Absolutely.
Because it's also an engineering question, right? If they can really produce a very large number of these single quantum dots, I mean, it's simply, it scales like n, and then...
Okay, but there are more clever ways to do this, right? So let me give you another example. So this is a paper I wrote, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years ago with Rafa Sanchez, Marcus Boudicker. And the idea is that suppose you've got these, you know, so the scheme we have, you know, you have something like this. So this is the energy diagram versus position. And then the idea is you have some cavity that you're heating, so this is some T hot, and then you have that in a circuit with some cavity T cold, and you put, say, a resonant tunneling quantum dot here with a level there, another resonant tunneling quantum dot with a level here, okay? And so now the idea is that electrons can come in from this region, okay? They can come in like this, they gain energy from the hot source. They can't go out this way, so they have to go out this way. Okay? And so you can, using the energetics, you can drive a small current. Okay, now you can say, well, how do I put that in some kind of a parallelized geometry? How do I scale it up? And so one idea we had was something, we draw something different in chalk. Is we design something we call the Swiss cheese sandwich. So the idea is you have some kind of a bulk reservoir. And then you put in some layer, like you put in some kind of insulating layer, thermal insulating layer. And then you put a region now of, basically, self-assembled quantum dots. So imagine you would actually fabricate this in some foundry. You would grow like this. Stop and put a different level of material in here, and you put in, then now you inject some impurity, so you get some quantum dots here in a kind of diffusive way in this material, okay? And then you would put in some cavity, so you grow the cavity like this, and then you do that again, okay? So then you get these little, the holes in the Swiss cheese are here, right? Okay, and then you cap it, okay? So now with this, and then of course you also put again some insulating layers, say here. Okay. So the idea now is that you arrange it. You can have some kind of Schottky barrier on this side, for example, that raises the levels here up. And so you arrange that the levels of these quantum dots are a little bit lower than the Fermi energy. These quantum dots have energy a little bit higher than the Fermi energy. And then simply you have something you want to heat. Say you inject heat from, say, your laptop or whatever here. Heat current goes in this way. And then charge current goes this way. Okay, so this is a more clever way of scaling this up to try to generate some macroscopic power, but using quantum principles to be able to design this material.
Also, this thing with ZT that you mentioned, that you said you hate, right? That's sort of rewriting Carnot in terms of ZT is a linear response.
Exactly,
thing, right?
Exactly.
So I mean, I guess most of these things are very far away from linear response, right? When you have very small things.
Yeah, so you can, indeed. So you can look at the linear response of these kind of devices, but you can easily go outside of this range.
And do people know any general results related to thermodynamics beyond linear response?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Read these thermoelectric papers. There are lots of work, right?
But this has been the people like Andrew and we've also worked on this thing. I think this was our message to those communities because they come from more macroscopic system where linear response is always a very good approximation. And we had to communicate the fact that if you want to analyze the thermoelectric effect in smaller devices, you easily get to the nonlinear regime. And this is when you start. You need the tools of non-equilibrium thermodynamics beyond linear regime. And I mean, these quantum dots, they are totally out of the linear regime. So if you calculate a ZT, it doesn't make any sense.
Makes sense.
And these people were doing that.
Yeah. So you think that this is an area where, like, in principle, if you're at low temperatures, quantum thermodynamics can help? Like the tools that are being developed, like master equations and these
things? Well, certainly, I think from a theoretical point of view, we told them how to analyze those kinds of devices beyond linear response. It's a cultural thing because, you know, an entire community works with a key quantity and they have an intuition for it, and then you have to tell them that this is not the right quantity when you go beyond linear response. So it's actually not easy. But I think now they catched up on these things slowly but surely.
Well, you mentioned sort of an elephant in the room, which you say at low temperature, right? And of course, most of these things we're designing, you know, they work at really well at millikelvin temperatures, but we don't live at millikelvin temperatures, right? And so this is also an elephant in the room, trying to design things that are robust against heating, right? So if your whole thing that works on quantum interference, then if you heat that up, you're going to kill it, right? So this is also something to worry about.
But the quantumness here is really the fact that the energy is quantized.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You don't really need coherence
in this kind of thing, sure. Yeah. Exactly.
I sort of want to come back to the practical relevance, and what I'm going to say now, we might want to cut out from the recording. Okay. So I think there is ways to get around helium with refrigeration. With macroscopic fridges, not going into any detail, but just mentioning sorption fridges and stuff like this. And sort of the stuff I hear here reminds me very much of the concluding remarks at a conference that I've attended, like in 2010 or something, on one-dimensional quantum magnets. I don't know, Marcos, you might be there as well. Okay. So, it was all about these one-dimensional quantum magnets and whether that's going to be ballistic heat transport and blah, 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 blah. Okay. So in the end, people wanted to agree on why are we even doing research on this. And so the final words were like, okay, this is good for, one, cooling microprocessors and laptops and stuff, B, quantum computing. So it's pretty much sort of the same that has been brought forward here. So it seems a little bit to me like whenever it's sort of not really visible that something will be of practical relevance, people claim it's going to be good for quantum computing. I mean, and it's evolving around quantum, right? Then it's going to be good either to build a quantum computer or to do some sort of super cooling on a microscale.
Yeah, I guess the third comment
of that happened, right? This was 2011.
Yeah. So, but the third you missed the third common application, which is sensing, right? That's the if you look at all the calls for quantum industrial things.
So
sensors are another big
issue. Sensing,
right? And so one of the big themes of the conference has been thermometry, for example, how to build better thermometers, right? This is another area that could be very practical. So I completely agree with what you said. I think there are other areas.
Yeah, but I want to make a comment on your comment. The question is, what is the community interested in? So I think the community is interested because we're curious people and we want to see how things work. So it's like you take your car, you open the engine, and you start to throw away parts, and then you try to put them back together and pray that it will work again. And so I think this is what drives the community now. This issue, if it's going to be practical or not, is a question how to sell it to the larger community, which is now capitalistic. But you could say that's not the only option. There are funding agencies. I run a funding agency that the main point was there that if it's good research, it should be funded. It doesn't have to be practical in any way. So I don't say this is always what's going to happen. Just to give you an example, I read two proposals, one of Columbus and one from Magellan, which is the same idea. They wanted to basically see if the Columbus had the radius of the Earth wrong by a factor of 2/3. But people knew the radius of the Earth. So he went to the Portuguese, which knew the radius of the Earth, and said, I have this proposal to go to India. I said, Europe. If it would go to one of you to review, and you know you have the scientific knowledge, you would say, this guy is talking bullshit. He has a wrong number, and this proposal should be funded. So then he went to the Queen of Spain and said, listen, I'm going to make you rich. And he went, which was even more important, he went to the priest of the Queen, and convinced that he'll find many souls that he could convert to Christianity. That also were both things, and he put a proposal that had nothing to do with what he wanted to do, but this we know from our experience. And eventually, although he had a big mistake, he found something interesting, yeah, you could put it like that. And Magellan was the same. He was Portuguese. He wanted to find a new route to reach the Philippines, where they had spices. And this, but the Portuguese had a route to do that. So they said, why should we find a different route? So he went to the Spanish and said, listen, I'll find your route. And he sold it that they'll bring them spices back to Spain, and they'll become rich. So what completely capitalistic was a proposal written. You can read it. Completely capitalistic. And you could say how it started. He got 17 ships. He financed. It's much bigger from the point of view of capital than what we have here, any of us. He sailed to Buenos Aires, where later, and mapped all South America. And eventually, one ship came back to Spain out of the 17. And they brought some spices. I don't know, a little bit of pepper. And I think the lives that were lost in this expedition, I don't know, a few hundred at least, and they fought each other, you know that. And so I think, for at least in this community, we don't have to go too far and trying to justify. I think this is, if you ask me the commercial direction, refrigeration makes sense. This is what is obvious today, but in a way, when you develop new science, you never know what's going to be beyond the, I would say, 5 years. So you could say, what you're talking about, the technology didn't develop in 10 years, but maybe in another 10 years, it will boom. This is also something known about technology, that it has a very low startup, because you have to replace a lot of inertia, and then if it's important, it jumps. But I, personally, I don't care. I just tell you, I admit, I don't care. If it's interesting, let's go after it. And so now, if I try to change the tone, because I said, okay, these are interesting things, but I want to make it so we have science and technology. So what we, okay, I think Andrew started with science and moved to technology, and we got stuck to that. So I want to go back. I said, let's use technology to make science. This is how I look at it. And so and we want to do good science. So the science we're interested in, the theme is quantum thermodynamics, and this is, you could say, what I'm changing the theme. What are the scientific questions about quantum thermodynamics? So I've got a few lists of this is open problems. So I think there's I'll write it here. So we'll remember why we're here.
The beach.
So the thing is, this is a question mark which has been answered partially in this meeting. What is quantum? So here, for example, we have some things that we know. We know it's quantum in the level of what I would call stochastic, that we have discrete energy levels. We know it's quantum in the level that we need coherence. So this is a thing that has been discussed, and we have examples of that. But we don't have a good example, you can say, of it. Entanglement, I think, hasn't been exploited. At least people mentioned it, but I make entanglement, but so what? But it's not a... And quantum supremacy, making a refrigerator work in parallel and using some quantum effect, we haven't worked this out yet. You can say this is the question. I know there are papers about that. There are a few examples. There's a recent paper by Gershon Kolinsky, which claims that he could show that at certain limits, if you link in a quantum coherent way devices together, you can get more power. So the scaling is better than n. The scaling would be n. Ideally, if it's super radiance, you could think it's n squared. But so this could be another idea to exploit. Like here, I think this is a very good idea to exploit the back of the gap. You could exploit super radiance to basically cool faster, do things, and use higher power. This would be an example of. So this is an open issue. I think this hasn't been solved. There are ideas about that, but I think they're not yet convincing, at least from my point of view. Maybe other people think differently about that. So this is still an open problem here. And I just want to raise something that was, I think, discussed yesterday, and which I think should be reflected today, this issue of heat and work, which you could, in a way, you could put it, formalize it differently, the role of the output coupler. And this has been known in thermoelectrics for many times. You can't forget the leads. You have to really describe them. But I think this is also, when we talk about heat, we have to work. How is it extracted? This is because once we talk about quantum, we're going to get feedback. So I have my personal toy problem, or two toy problems, one we published, one we didn't publish, because I don't understand it well enough. And the toy problem that I have an engine, hot source, and I have, as we said, two qubits here, two qubits here, and this engine, you can see the virtual qubit, which has population inversion, we heard this idea, trying to extract work by population inversion, is coupled to fly, quantum harmonic oscillator. And then you say, okay, what does it mean that I take this engine and I store this work, if you want to call it, or power, for later use? How can I really try to think about that? So let's start with the end. I have my pendulum, or my, and I want to store work in it. How can I extract it? And this is something that's even interesting classically. But if I have a pendulum, it's hanging from the ceiling, and I want to get work out of it, and I'm sitting on the ceiling, and I'm not seeing what's happened here. If I don't know where, what's the phase, I can't get work out. This is even a well-known classical example. This is exactly the same. So if we think about phase space, if I take a coherent state, and I apply a unitary on it, move here in phase space. But if I move here, I know how to move back. So if I know where I am, because I can reverse this. So if I'm here, I can get the work back. So this is, you can say, if I know the phase, I can extract all the work. So that I have to know the phase. So this already leads to this idea that this is something already somewhat microscopic, because this coherent state is the closest thing we can think about. It's not classical. So now what happens when I couple, this is my output of my engine goes to here. So in a way, I want to store it here. But when I couple it, what I see in phase space, if I don't do anything, I'm going to get big torment, something, big block. This is useless. Basically, I store heat here. I can't do anything. I can use this as a source of heat for another engine. this is all I need. So what do we need to make this a storage device? And this was a surprise. We really have to work hard. And what does it mean to work hard? I have to know. I have to measure where I am. So I have to, in order to use this as a storage device, I have to measure, and basically I have to see, know what is the space. If I know what the space, I can get this out. But in order to measure, I have to also apply a feedback to stabilize the phase, not to get this out. Instead of that, we get something like that. If I apply measurement and feedback and try to do all the energetics, which is very difficult because you have to look at all the flows, eventually the storage efficiency immediately you can see is not one, because I'm going to heat it, but at least I have it localized in phase space, and you can see the unitary that's going to take the center of gravity from here to here. This is how I define the stored work. And amount of energy you can, that's in the block, this is amount of energy that you took out of your output device and put it here. Now, what makes this the story here? Because of quantum, there's inertia, there's kinetic energy. This is what really does the, okay, what allows you to do that, but this is also, so the question of storage of energy, which was how to store it, lifting a weight is also one of these classical examples. So if you put it only in potential energy, which is ideal, and I say we work in idealization and thermodynamics, that's a way to do that. So I said, okay, let's try to be realistic and say, okay, I have my Hamiltonian of my weight has kinetic energy plus energy, which would be at least, you can write your Hamiltonian, at least you can do something about that. And then I can do the same. I can use my heat engine, I couple it to the weight, and I do translation, basically using a couplet in such a way that it lifts the weight. Once you add this, you immediately see that you have a problem. There is acceleration. So your engine can't work because you're applying linearly here, and this is quadratic in time. So the acceleration of gravity is going to beat you. So you have to do something about it. This just can't work. So what can you do? What you can do, I have my weight, I can add friction here. So then I add another thermodynamic device. To stop the acceleration, I have to add friction. Basically, your elevator needs this friction device, otherwise it will never work. So once I add this, I have to account for this. So I have friction that will change, you can say, into a constant velocity of lifting my weight instead of acceleration. And once I have that, you can, at certain approximations, you can solve it. I can say I can solve it in the semi-classical limit, and it looks reasonable. If you look at numbers in the microscopic world, they're not there. You can just never can. As this refrigerator, that this friction has to be cooled down to temperatures which are absurd. No, because in a way this friction absorbs energy and dissipates it. If it's hot, it's going to put fluctuations, and again you lost what's happening. In the semi-classical limit, this can work, and the quantum limit, I don't know. This is, for me, it's an open problem. Equations written, I have even a draft, but I don't know what to do with it yet. So, I think I raised a few issues that bother me. No, don't bother. Make me happy because I have something to work about.
Okay, can I ask something?
Sure.
So, okay. This, where you first called this the flywheel, but then it was the harmonic oscillator, which is almost the same, right? If we stick with the harmonic oscillator, this again reminds me very much of a laser. Isn't that what an optically pumped laser does?
It doesn't have all the components of a laser, because, okay, It has an output coupler, because in a way I have a way to take.
Right, but if you think of the electromagnetic field itself, the field model, I mean, this is what the Nobel Prize was given for to Roy Glauser, right?
But there's a cavity there, and it stabilizes it. And so you could say, in this respect, there's a nice recent paper by Scully about lasers.
A nice paper by Scully?
Yeah.
You're on fire then,
huh? I would say that's something like that. You have to be careful when you read. But he has very good ideas. And this is, the idea is, again, goes back to the issue of output coupling. And what he does there, he calculates the entropy production in the laser. The light that goes out is not working. It has entropy.
What do you mean? Does it eventually mean that the laser is not producing a coherent state?
This is our idealization. It doesn't. Well, it says it can't. In a way, what he says, what he claims in this paper, that the laser can't produce pure work, an ideal coherent beam. It's always...
Okay, but we know that we can get close to this.
Okay, that's the same with post condensation. Analogous to Bose condensation. You could think about the laser as you're condensing photons and making them indistinguishable. So you could think about it in this way. This is, in a way, how it's described. So when you do a Bose condensation, there's always a part that's not condensed. It's an equilibrium. So when you're colder and colder, you could say that entropy is carried away by the part that's not condensed. And you have the condensed part. So when you look at it, for many applications and many considerations, you only look at the condensate. You forget about the part that's in equilibrium with the condensate, which carries the entropy. So it's and then the same thing with a laser. For laser point of view, you don't really care about it. But only what you care about is a coherent part, and you say this is a part that I'm going to use, but there's always a part that's the incoherent. The practitioners even have a name, I forgot how it's called, the stimulated amplified light, SDL, something like that. And then, engineers of lasers know about it. But in our ideal world, we forget about that.
Okay, so, I mean, what's then the question here? I mean, you cannot make an ideal laser, right? Is that, like, to what extent is this statement correct, or what is the question?
Okay, so I would say the issue is, once you have an output coupler, so you could say, because of the quantum back action, that goes back all the way back the chain until you, so you can't really consider, I think you can't consider the work or whatever energy flows without considering what are you doing. And a laser, you can say, an ideal laser takes out of the cavity nothing. Basically, you try to condense as much as you want, and you put a small hole to get a little bit out of it so it won't disturb.
But that would be yet another step, right? I mean, well, isn't in this analogy the electromagnetic field and the energy in the electromagnetic field within the laser already the work in this sense because it's in a coherent state like your flywheel, or this, to understand this wrong.
Yeah, okay, so that, I don't want to do better, so that's how I define the work. In this case, I would say this is what Robert said yesterday, this is in a certain sense analogous to the measurement problem. We don't know where to stop. We've always we want to include more and more in our description, and then at a certain point we should stop. You can say here our tendency is to stop at the semi-classical limit, and then we know what to do.
Okay.
This is my notion.
Okay, thanks. And the other question is, I mean, your weight there, where we say, okay, let's forget about the flywheel, the harmonic oscillator, now we think we've got to lift the weight, right? I mean, just like this, it will never stop, it fall down.
That's why you add friction.
But isn't it, again, more like the measurement thing? If you knew exactly how much energy
you have to know
you
where you are.
Sort of you wouldn't need friction, you just wait until it turns around and then you stop.
So fix it at this.
Yeah, but that's in all the years. Right, what you suggested was not, which is, I think your suggestion is legitimate. What we did, we added friction and we looked at a steady state operation where the weight is lifted at constant velocity. So this is, we looked at that. What you suggest is to measure where the weight is, which is more like what Andrew's suggesting, and then stop. If you didn't take into consideration all this thing that has to measure and put feedback and this is something we didn't do this analysis, but you could. You could measure, you could ask what is the cost of this measurement, what back action this measurement is going to do on the weight. And the,
so do you see a principal difference in between the cases where the system that stores your work, in a sense, probably I shouldn't be saying this because maybe work cannot be stored or whatever, but in this picture that there is a principal difference between this being a flywheel and harmonic oscillator on its weight?
Yeah, there is
a principal
difference. There's one principle. Harmonic oscillator has a bottom to its energy, so you can always go up. And the weight, in a way, it's a singular kind of device because the spectrum goes from minus infinity to infinity. And this is not so good.
The weight has a bottom somewhere.
I'm saying it has a bottom. The way, usually, at least this Hamiltonian x goes from minus infinity to infinity, you assume that, and then it means that your spectrum has no bottom. It's infinite energy. This is a little bit not aesthetic. I would say that this is, you can say, the model that people use. The weight can go from here to, I don't know, to Mars or whatever. And there is a problem here, even with a master equation that you include, which to describe the friction, which is, it's a problem.
The flywheel has a bottom as well, right?
Yeah, the flywheel has a bottom. And you can say, there was a Sola which described a rotor engine, which has a lot of resemblance to this. It's also in the way you store the certain rotary motion that would be more close to the standard flight. If you look at the equations, they're very close to what you can put it on.
Thanks.
Other questions, suggestions?
Coffee.
So let's have, that's the best suggestion I heard today. So let's have coffee.